the Fan. Fan. On demand.
Go to fan590.com and sign up to automatically receive the latest reports, features, and Fan 590 show highlights. Have you got game? Got game on Toronto Sports Radio, the Fan 590 and fan590.com.
This is Got Game, a show by gamers, for gamers, right here on the Fan 590. Each and every week, we bring you the latest in video game news, reviews, and interviews. I'm Zach Cooper, joined by Momin Qureshi, Ken Rodney, and Brian Calhoun. And coming up, we break down EA Sports' decision to indefinitely postpone NBA Elite 11. We get the inside stuff on NBA Jam with our main man, Trey Smith. The Taliban gets eliminated from Medal of Honor, so to speak. And we've got reviews of FIFA 11, Dead Rising 2, and Deathspank Thongs of Virtue.
Have you got game?
The Lowdown. This is Got Game on the Fan 590. I am Zach Cooper. We've got Momin Qureshi, Ken Rodney, and Brian Calhoun. Momin, good to see that you like video games again.
Yes.
Welcome back.
Yeah, I took a little hiatus in the Himalayan mountains.
Hope you don't like the idea of NBA Elite 11 coming anytime soon, because it's not going to happen. We heard earlier in the week that EA Sports was going to postpone the release, which was set for Tuesday, for NBA Elite 11 indefinitely. So we don't know when it's going to come, if at all. So it's out there somewhere. Kevin Durant, who's on the cover, found out by Twitter that it wasn't coming out at some point. I think the question that has to be raised, and it was actually brought up from a guy who wrote into Got Game. His name's Ed, and he's a fan of the show. We've heard from him on a few occasions via email, and he was curious about how social media might have affected this. It all pretty much started, we assume, from the release of the demo, which was, I guess, a couple weeks back on September 21st. They released the NBA Elite 11 demo, and then a video went viral on the internet. It was Andrew Bynum of the Lakers stuck in, what is best being described as a Jesus pose. Center court, stuck, frozen, arms spread out, feet
straight
down.
Let's call it a LeBron intro pose. You know, when he takes the talcum powder and throws it up in the air.
Yeah.
But that, I'm more comfortable with that.
Okay.
Term.
We'll pretend that's
a lot of the people who are currently emailing the show are also more comfortable with that term.
All right, so call it what you want. He was stuck in that, and then everyone started going crazy. People obviously sharing their impressions, saying this game is garbage. How are they going to compete with 2K11? We know about the Twitter age and how quickly information spreads. People obviously saw this video very quickly, but I want to pose to you the idea where are we put in a position of having too much power, where we get to see this and based on the negative reaction. EA Sports, we can deduct that EA Sports has pulled back based on the fact that they don't feel they're ready. They can't deal with the negative publicity that's followed that, and now they're scrambling. You know, they've seen the positive, glaring reviews of 2K11, and now it's a little more tough to compete when you're stuck in an uphill battle.
Well, I mean, that's the age we live in, though, right? I mean, companies are going to use social media for good. Like Old Spice are the kings of that right now, where they used Twitter and Facebook and everything else to get their good stuff across. So you can't blame the people if they're going to go out and use those same resources to share their negative opinions about things. And we knew right from the beginning that EA was in big trouble this year with Elite. They knew Live was bad, so they had to relaunch it with Elite. As soon as the Jordan factor came out for 2K, they were in bigger trouble. They tried to couple this with Jam to try to save themselves, and they've had trouble from the beginning. They were under the gun right from the start. And so for fans to voice their opinion about it, I don't think this is something they didn't hear from the beginning. Like, they were already, down one to be from the start. So, I mean, I am surprised, though, that they're just pulling it all together.
Would say that's the exact right amount of power. I mean, I think when it comes down to it, if you're EA, you look at the situation and it could have gone one of two ways. You could either have released a glitchy game that nobody was planning to buy because everybody saw your demo and realized that your game wasn't going to be good, or you can get the idea that people aren't interested in the game the way it is, or at least that there are problems with the game, and get the chance to fix it so the people who weren't planning to buy the game can maybe change their mind. I mean, the point is, social media has actually helped EA, because if they put this game in the market with all this, with all people feeling negative about it, guess what? It's dead in the water. So, I mean, finding out that there's a negative reaction about your game, well, that's good. That's not bad.
Well, the problem is here, we're making a connection here that we can only assume is there. We're not totally sure this is indeed the reason. But I have a problem with that idea, in the sense that EA was ready to release a game next week that had the Taliban as the bad guys, so they're okay with getting negative feedback from...
Well, evidently they're not. I mean, we'll get to that. Get to that in a moment, but there's more
here. What I was about to say was that this could be a problem that they did not know about until now. You can sit there with, you know, 100 guys and try and play test a game for months and months and months and only get through a fraction of all the problems. You put it out there in the wild, that's when you really find problems you've never seen before. So,
and that's why the demo's put out there in the first place.
Yeah. Partly to generate hype, but you know, you can also get this other factor from it. And I think they put that out there. They found this problem that they didn't know existed until you got in the hands of billions of people. And now they're, you know, sidestepping to try and fix the problem, get back out there.
Yeah, and just playing to your point, the idea that it's only good, it can only help them understand the problem that's out there. I mean... An analyst has predicted that they're going to lose out on $60 million because of this. I mean, we always know...
But did that analyst predict how much money they would have lost if they put the game out there that nobody was interested in playing?
Not everyone is that well informed anyways. Not everyone knows about, you know, the merits of a 2K11 or an NBA Elite, for this sake. You know, you go to a store, you see the cover, you're like, oh, hey, Kevin Durant's on that cover. I'll check this out. They know the EA Sports brand. It's a pretty big deal. Some people just, you know, on a whim, they'll pick it up. They don't necessarily compare reviews. The fact as well that they're missing out on launch day, you know, when NBA Jam, when 2K11 launches, when Elite was supposed to launch, having those all side by side on the same day is huge. You're getting a late start, and that already puts them at a disadvantage. Think about all the people who are interested in basketball games. Now this isn't even an option for them. Who knows when it's coming out, if at all. But by the time it does, most people who are interested in a basketball game probably already will have NBA 2K11.
You know, I'm not so sure I agree with that either. I mean, I've been watching baseball games this entire season because I'm a big baseball fan, and MLB The Show, the original Joe Mauer, well-played Mauer commercial, you know, I just got my copy of MLB 10 The Show. They're still using that commercial. I mean, it's the first week of October, and they're still using the commercial that they've been using since March. So, I mean, I have to think that there are people out there that are still, I mean, maybe not now, but there's still people that later on in the season pick up a game.
Yeah.
So if you're somebody who doesn't get into basketball until mid-season, or you're somebody who plays other games and then gets your basketball game mid-season, maybe this is better. Maybe that this game will be able to come out with some hype, and people will be talking about it. Hey, guess what? Elite was an awful game with a really bad glitch that they've managed to go fix, and now it's back. And maybe that'll create the hype that'll get people to buy it mid-season.
Well, I think what EA really needs to do is they have to get it out before the holiday season gets into full gear. That's the deadline they're under now. Like, mid-November at the latest is when they have to get this game out to the market, because the holiday dollars are all the only hope they have to cash in. The one thing I wanted to say is I'm very surprised by this, because EA is so prolific and we're so spoiled by them making amazing games, specifically sports games, that this whole mess up is really surprising.
Well, it might pay off for some fans of NBA Jam in the long run, because one thing we have learned from this is that they're going to turn NBA Jam into a standalone game.
Yes.
It comes out for the Wii on Tuesday, but it will be available by the holidays for the PS3 and the 360. We'll be talking about NBA Jam with the creative director, Trey Smith, in just a few moments, talking about what's in the game, and there's a lot more that's under the surface that you may not be aware of. And we try and establish what people can expect from the HD consoles as well. So that's a little bit later on. Calhoun, you alluded to a story about EA pulling back on negative publicity in regards to another game. That game is Medal of Honor. And we had spoken about it a few weeks ago, the idea of playing as the Taliban in this next installment. That's due out in a month or so. And they've caved as well. They've pulled back. They've removed Taliban as a playable entity, or essentially they've removed the name Taliban and changed it to the opposing force. But this is the same sort of thing where, you know, public fuel has sort of gotten into their heads, And, you know, there's only so much negative publicity you can take before it comes too much. And obviously they've reached their boiling point. On the Medal of Honor website, the executive producer, Greg Goodrich, wrote, "This franchise will never willfully disrespect, intentionally or otherwise, your memory and service to all who we appreciate you. We thank you and we do not take you for granted. And to the soldiers, sailors, airmen and Marines currently serving overseas, stay safe and come home soon." I mean, obviously, that's a heartfelt sentiment. I'm sure, you know, he actually means it. But it's also damage control. They did a fair amount of damage. They got a lot of negative attention for the idea of being able to play as the Taliban in online multiplayer.
I guess, but, you know, there's always been the school of thought that any attention a company can get is, well, it's good attention because at least it gets eyes on their product. And I don't know. This whole thing seems too convenient to me. You know, it's just... they come out now, a week before the game is going to be released, and say, oh, we're taking the Taliban out now? How does that work? They would have had to send the final copy of the game to the manufacturing companies, I don't know, maybe a month ago or so, to get enough copies printed off and sent to stores. The logistics of actually making a game are incredible. So this is a choice they would have had to make maybe a month ago. So for them to come out now and say, oh, we've taken the Taliban out, other games, you know, it'll just be the opposition now. It's just all too convenient for me. It just all seems like, I don't know, call me paranoid, but it all just seems like it was a plan from day one to get attention for the game. Oh, we're going to be edgy. Here's the Taliban. It's in our game. Oh, you know, we're on the lean edge. And then all of a sudden, you know, just before the game comes out, oh, hey, well, let's play it safe. Taliban, not in our game. It's the opposition. I don't know. Just every way I look at it, just it all seems too convenient.
You know what? I can definitely see Calhoun's point of view where you have to have obviously a game ready for launch fairly early.
It's not much they need to change.
When we had this initial discussion, one of the things I said was if you simply change the name, you can keep everything the same and just change the name and people will be fine. The majority of people will be fine with it.
Windows 7 was your idea.
That's right. Yeah. It was. I'm suing Bill Gates. Stole my idea. But no, I think that's the simplest thing you can do. But it is a very... While I hope his sentiments are very heartfelt, it is curious timing that a week before launch he puts it out there and says, oh, we changed everything. And who can blame him? You know, that's clever on their part. Good for them.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing I really have to add to that is I would wonder who works in their common sense department. Like, are they surprised that people were, the Taliban, that's a sensitive subject?
I think they're counting on it.
Well, how did that happen?
I honestly think they're counting on it, you know?
I don't want to believe that. I don't want to believe that, but I have a hard time not believing it, I suppose. But I have no idea why they wouldn't have realized they had to get to this. And maybe everything you said is true. Maybe the whole point of this was that it was never going to be that in the first place. They knew they were going to have to pull it back.
Maybe it was, but maybe it wasn't, and they did wise up and decide to change it at the last second.
It's good that it's not going to be so.
Yeah, if anything we can agree on in the show... it's good that at least they've taken it out.
All right, a couple of quirky stories because we only have about a minute and a half here. You know, we hear about things like this every now and then, but this one was a little interesting. A guy in Salt Lake City playing online with his friends when masked men came into his house and started beating him with a bat. His friends, who he's playing with online, hear this happening. One of them scoots over in time to see them just sort of take off. One of them takes off his mask. He recognizes that guy, tells police there have yet to be any arrests, but video games, you know,
to the
fighting
rescue.
Crime again. Beautiful story. Not a great story here with Nintendog's 9-year-old girl, and I believe it is Great Britain. She's playing Nintendog's at her friend's house, and at one point, you know, this virtual dog barks, sends a real dog into a bit of a frenzy, bites her face, severs her lip, the top part of her lip, and it has to be surgically reattached. So, game save and also can hurt lives. And a grandmother of this child wrote in to the paper that covered the story and said, you know, they should really put warnings on this, where if you have a real dog, you might not want to play. That dog has since been put down, but figured I'd throw it out there. It's just, you know, it's stuff reality to know about. Yes, it's the real life of games. It's crazy.
I mean, it's a really bad situation, I'll agree, but I'm sure you could have put that same game in a room with 100 other dogs and maybe not have the same reaction. I don't know.
On the other side, we've got some NBA Jam chatter. We also have reviews of FIFA 11, Dead Rising 2, Deathspank, Thongs of Virtue. Plenty to come. We're going to try and sneak in some Nintendo 3DS chatter as well. This is Got Game on the Fan 590.
We've got game. Do you in the game?
This is Got Game on the Fan 590. I'm Zach Cooper alongside Momen Qureshi, Ken Rodney, and Brian Calhoun. NBA Jam will be a standalone title, not only on the Wii, that comes out on Tuesday, but on the PS3 and 360 by the holidays. We'll find out exactly, well, I guess kind of what we can expect from those down the line as we check in with the creative director, Trey Smith. But in the meantime, is this good or bad, the idea of it being a standalone title available for the HD consoles? Thoughts, quickly.
Definitely. I love this idea that it's going to be by itself. I think coupling it with Elite was a sort of a ditch effort to try to make Elite sell, but I love the idea of this being a standalone.
But is this going to hurt the Wii sales, Ken?
Absolutely, it's going to hurt the Wii sales. It's going to hurt the sales of the game, and it's going to hurt the sales of the console, because I know there are people that probably would have got in for it. Is it a good thing that they have to do it? No. Is it a necessary thing they have to do it? No doubt.
But still, I mean, I could see a lot more people buying Jam overall now that's not part of Elite, because a lot of people are looking at that going, I really want to play Jam, but I'm not totally sure I want to drop the money for Elite. So I see a lot more people actually getting the game now that they're separated. And I couldn't be happier. This is the exact situation I personally want, because I don't care about Elite, but I really want Jam.
Well, what can you expect in the Wii version of NBA Jam? Let's find out. Here's creative director Trey Smith on Got Game on the Fan 590. All right, Trey, I guess first off, I want to ask you the pressures from a creative standpoint to bring back NBA Jam and make sure that it touches on those heartstrings that everyone remembers so fondly about, you know, the original NBA Jams going back years.
Yeah, that's some serious pressure. Yeah, I mean, we found out, we were just a 2-on-2 arcade basketball game inspired by Jam, and we were calling it Bounce. And then we kind of called around, got a hold of our partners at the NBA, and they said, you know, we asked them, hey, you wouldn't happen to know who has the NBA Jam license, would you? And they said, why, we do. And then we said, well, can we borrow it, please? You know, and they said, yes, absolutely. We'd love for you guys to bring it back. So, like, that night, we partied like crazy. We're just like, woo, we're making NBA Jam, yeah. And the next day, we woke up, and we're like, oh, we got to make NBA Jam. So, yeah, you know, it's a daunting thing. It's the expectations, especially since the game hasn't been out since, 17 years was the original arcade cabinet. You know, nostalgia is a crazy, crazy thing. And, yeah, it's tough, but the great thing is we just made that checklist of what are all the things that made up Jam back in the day, and make sure we tick every one of those boxes. Can you smash the backboard? Can you catch on fire? Can you goaltend when you're on fire? Like, all of those little things, just the look, the play, the feel, the rule set, we had to make sure we nailed that first. And you know, once we got it together and we started putting it into people's hands, and they said, wow, this is taking me right back to where I was hanging out with my, you know, my homies on playing on the Super NES. Like, it feels just like it did. And then we knew we were in good shape.
All right, so talk to me about the way of making the teams up. I know there was a lot of voting involved. How much did the votes play into, you know, the final decision of who's going on which team?
Yeah, those votes were everything. You know, this is the first time that I've worked on a game where we've actually, you know, got to really get in touch with the community through Facebook and through our website and that kind of thing. The fans voted. The fans voted for the starting three for everybody, and that was, I don't know, about 6 months ago or so. And obviously, there have been some moves since then. But at the end of the day, we default to what the fans wanted and the players wanted. So, you know, the starting three players in Jam, that's what the fans wanted, unless there was a trade, unless there was, you know, somebody new coming on the team. So, I mean, the fans were such a big part of us getting this game greenlit and bringing it back. You know, I had a presentation to Peter Moore, our president, and one of the slides in my presentation was all of the fans basically saying, we want Jam back. Please bring Jam back. So, you know, allowing the fans to vote, encouraging them to, was really us giving back to the fans of Jam and thanking them for helping us getting this going. And it's been really cool. And, you know, there wasn't a single player where we were just like, well, I don't know. I don't know if they picked the right guy here. It's we were right there with them, so.
Well, okay, then I want to bring you to the Raptors. Obviously, they're near and dear to our hearts, being that we're a Toronto station. Sure. And, you know, the starting lineup, you got DeMar DeRozan, Jared Jack, Andrea Borgnani, and the Raptor. I know some teams have legends. You couldn't have even given us Del Curry or something?
Yeah, you know, it's the rosters are such a tricky thing. You know, it's inevitably when you shorten and you only have like three starters, it's tough to make sure you get everybody. And when it comes to the legends, it was we had a limit to how many we could do based on our deal with the NBA. So you know, it's we did the best we could with what we had to work with, and working with the NBA. And I will say that the Raptor is probably a top 10 player in the entire game. So we tried to throw you guys a bone.
That's compensation right there. That's all I'm saying.
As best we could. He looks awesome. Have you seen him in game?
Like, no, I have not.
It's the mascots in particular we're very, very proud of, because it was one of those things where, you know how we're doing the 2D head, yeah, like the high resolution images for the player heads. When we decided that we were going to throw in mascots as just kind of a test case to go, okay, will they work with the art style that we've got? We plugged them in and they look awesome. So yeah, the Raptor is definitely a favorite of the dev team, of one of the best players in the game.
I just want to harp on a couple more legends. I know Shaq, obviously he's still in the game, but he's a legend for the Magic. You know, you've got no legends for the Thunder, and I was praying that, you know, we'd go back to the days of the Sonics and we'd see some Gary Payton, some Sean Kemp or anything, but nothing. I mean, how did you pick and choose which legends were making it in the game and which weren't?
Well, I mean, I can talk to the Sonics in particular that they're not part of the NBA anymore. So, you know, I mean, Kemp and Payton in particular, they're not part of the Players Association. So, you know, it's stuff like that. You know, a lot of the behind the scenes and the legalities of making games determine a lot of the decisions that we make. So that's what happened with on that front. As far as the other legends, you mentioned Shaq in particular.
Iverson as well.
Yeah, Iverson. Shaq in particular, the reason why, I mean, him going to Boston, they're so strong that, you know, they could conceivably have five or six guys in jam, but we had to make sure it was, you know, what we felt that were you know, what the fans wanted, A, and then B, what was the best well-rounded team that we could throw out there for those three guys, and that's where the adjustment came with that. So Shaq being on the Magic, again, breaking the backboard was such a huge part of the original jam. In fact, we've got our own standalone game mode called Backboard Smash, where it's a two-on-two game where the idea is to destroy your opponent's backboard before they destroy yours. And then
how does one destroy backboard?
It's kind of like Street Fighter meets Jam. That was the inspiration for that game mode. And each backboard has a health meter. And if you sink a regular shot, then it just takes like a little nick of the health out of the backboard. But if you catch on fire, then it's a little bit more. And then if you catch on fire and do an alley-oop, then it takes a big chunk from that health meter. So it like throws scores out the window. It's all about damaging the backboard. So we had that mechanic in. It was a lot of fun. So that kind of gave us the inspiration for the Shaq boss battle, since he was, I mean, I think he broke two backboards. I saw him do it in Phoenix, and I think he did it another time, where he comes in. It's a one-on-one boss battle, which is something new that we've got going on in Jam. And he flies through the air and cracks the backboard about halfway. So the health meter is half. And then you have 2 minutes to essentially keep Shaq from destroying the backboard. If he doesn't destroy it within those two minutes, then you win the boss battle. So that's where Shaq came into play. Yeah, I mean, there are reasons for each and every move that we made, and a lot of the times it has to do with, you know, the boss battles, the legends, the matchups. I mean, we were really, really careful on how everything falls into place.
We're talking with Trey Smith, who's the creative director for NBA Jam here on Got Game. You know, you mentioned a couple of game modes there. I know that you guys have fleshed it out pretty deeply, at least for the Nintendo Wii version, and I definitely want to get into the, you know, what folks can expect on their 360s, on their PS3s as well. But in the meantime, you know what's coming on the Wii, because it's coming out on Tuesday.
Yeah.
So tell us about what else there is. You've told us about the backboard breaker. You've told us about the one-on-one boss battles. I know there's horse. I know there's campaign. Give us the goods.
Sure. You know, first and foremost, the NBA Jam and the Wii do something awesome, which is bring people together to play games. And, you know, we've been showing the game for 10 months now, and it's insane how you can get four complete strangers standing up there and using the gesture controls. And these aren't, it's not a waggle fest. We've all played those crappy Wii games where, you know, the gestures don't match up with what you're doing. You're not getting the responsiveness. We spent so much time on those gestures, making sure that that they feel good and absolutely enhance the experience. So when you flip the Wiimote up, that makes your player jump. And then from that point, you flip it forward to either release your shot at the top of the jump arc, just like every other basketball game ever made. It's the same gesture for dunking. You go towards the hoop, you flip the Wiimote up to jump in the air, and then you slam it down to slam it home. And it's the same thing with a block. You flip the Wiimote up to jump in the air, and then you swing forward forward to swat. So it's a two-part gesture. That's the only gesture in the game. Everything else is on buttons, but I'll tell you firsthand, it feels so much better to dunk on somebody's head with that gesture than it does with a button. So, you know, those gesture controls are so inherent with the experience with the Wii. I'm so confident. I've seen so many people, like, just to straight up convert people. They're like, I don't do gestures. And then by the end of the game, I've had people, even the most hardcore Jam fans, say, you know, I was against the gestures, but now that I've used them, it's going to be hard to go back to the buttons. So that's an experience that is exclusive to the Wii that you will only get on the Wii. And, you know, that bringing out four people together on the couch playing, that's what the Wii experience for us is all about. We've got the classic campaign, which is just like you would have got if you started popping quarters in the stand-up arcade machine. It's a worst-to-first ladder tournament. And then we've sprinkled in some legends, you know, for each of the divisions. And then the final two-on-two game is against Magic and Bird. Both those guys have never been in Jam before. So that's kind of half the game. You know, the half game is we wanted to make sure we provided the old-school Jam fans with an authentic Jam experience. You throw one power up on the court, and there are some of those old-school Jam fans who are like, I'm not playing it. Uh-uh, it's not Jam. So we wanted to make sure that half game was that pure Jam experience. And then the other half of the game is something we're calling Remix Tour, and we talked about Backboard Smash. That's one of the game modes. You know, we talked about some of the other half-court games like 21, like the one-on-one boss battles. That's what Remix Tour is, and there's so much depth and replayability. It takes our best tester 38 hours to play through that entire campaign, the Remix Tour.
Wow.
And you can either play it all by yourself, or you can play it with a buddy on your couch together at the same time.
Wow.
So that's what you get on the Wii, which is awesome.
And you know what? We're running short on time here, but yep. I do want to ask you, you know, if you can tell us what we can expect when it comes, you know, quote-unquote holiday period for the 360 and the PS3 now as a standalone game.
You got it. I'll tell you, it's we're doing everything in our power to get as much on there as possible. I mean, we had online up. It was a really basic online feature set. We're trying to blow that out. And then you get Remix. You know, we're trying to throw it all in there. Right now, I mean, we got this bomb dropped on us just a couple of days ago as well. So we're shuffling to get everything together, but we got a great team. We got a lot of stuff up and working. We're going to polish it up. We're going to get it out there before holidays. And it's really up to you if you want to hang out with your friends and use gesture controls. You got it on the Wii. If you want to go online and you want that HD experience, you go on the PS3 360.
That is Trey Smith, the creative director for NBA Jam. It is available on the Wii on Tuesday by the holidays, as you heard, for 360 and PS3. We'll see if it's an exact clone, but there's obviously a lot to this game and a lot more than there ever was. It should be a lot of fun. Next week, of course, we'll have our NBA 2K11 chatter, and hopefully we'll have a review of NBA Jam as well. We do have our reviews of FIFA 11, Dead Rising 2, and Death Spank, Thongs of Virtue on the other side on Got Game on the Fan 590.
We've got game. Do you? Gameplay.
This is Got Game on the Fan 590. I'm Zach Cooper. We got Moment Qureshi, Ken Rodney, and Brian Calhoun, the crew is intact. Once again, before we get to our reviews, got some Nintendo 3DS news that we want to pass along, some stuff that just came down over the last few days. It has been dated in Japan and in North America. February 26th over in Japan, 3DS. And it's supposed to come out the week after here in North America as well as Europe. But there's one analyst from Wedbush Morgan who doesn't think that's going to happen, Michael Pachter, saying no freaking way is a matter of fact, the 3DS launches in North America a week after it gets released in Japan. It was originally supposed to be launched by the holidays, we assumed, but hardware shortages pushed things back because Nintendo predicts it's going to sell 4 million 3DSs in the first month, which is pretty staggering in itself, but not anything close to the billions of people who downloaded the NBA Elite 11.
So maybe they could see if they could get NBA Elite 11 on the 3DS. Yes.
I think the idea is you get Jesus involved and then it'll all work out.
And LeBron James, his
now,
partner.
Is the Nintendo 3DS going to cost $300 because of consumer excitement? This is what we're getting from Nintendo president Satoru Iwata. It was translated from some people over at Adriana Sang.
Andrea Sang, excuse me, which is a gaming site in Japan. They say the price point was established based on many factors. This is in the translation, including the response they got at the E3 reveal. By the way, 3DS will also have automatic firmware updates, which is either good or bad, depending on where you stand on updates. But what it allows Nintendo to do is introduce new features, but also combat piracy.
I really hope that that's not true, because if that's the case, if the price point went up because of people's reaction, I mean, of all the dangerous precedents that I've seen video game companies set,
that we've spoken
that
on this
one
week
is,
too.
That one is number one. I mean, yeah. If you're going to tell me that the more excited people are about your product, the more you're going to make it cost, your advance buzz is dead, because nobody's ever going to say that they're interested in anything you do again.
Also, to add to that, one of the things Nintendo has always been known for is to create good products at reasonable prices, and that's why a lot of their units move. That's why Game Boys move. That's why Wii's move, because they're cheaper than the alternative. So for them to jack up the price of this, allegedly, based on consumer demand, is kind of sad.
Yeah, and they can try and charge $300 if they want, but I remember Sony tried to charge $700 for the PS3 when it first launched. That didn't work out for them.
$300 and $700 are completely different, though.
Yeah, but
almost $400.
But we're also talking console versus different, too.
Exactly. Console versus handheld is a different market.
Yeah, this is also 3D technology that's no one... whatever. We got a lot of reviews that we want to get to, so let's do that. Let's start off with FIFA 11. Ken, thoughts?
Well, FIFA 11, I mean, I just want to start out by saying that I think this is a really, really, really good game, in case I forget to come back to that based on everything that I say. This is a really, really good game. It's a really fun game to play. Much like FIFA 10, FIFA 10 made such a huge leap from 09, and 11 sort of continues on that vein. It's got all of the teams that you would expect to be there, the entire English league, plus the first and second divisions of most of the big leagues, and some leagues that only have a second division, like MLS. Oh, that's their first division. I'm sorry. That's also in there. No, that one just tanked, eh? one of the things that they've added to the game this year, I didn't write down what the Be a Pro mode was called, so I'm just going to call it
the equivalent to, yes.
Is that you could play as the keeper. And one of the cool aspects of that now is that when you play online, you can play 11v11. The only problem is anybody that's a big soccer fan knows the keeper makes like four plays in a game, and it's unfortunately like that. So, I mean,
and they're either loved or hated because of those.
That's
four.
True. Yeah, yeah, exactly. You make four plays, and three of those are dives that don't get anywhere near the ball. So, I mean, the problem with the keeper play is that it's realistic. So it's kind of
lame,
boring, right?
Yeah.
They've made a lot of improvements, or I should say, they've made the improvements you'd expect, the year-to-year improvements in terms of passes, shooting, crosses. I mean, everything improves the way you would expect it to improve. The problem with this game, the one thing that kind of struck me is...
It came out 3 months after World Cup?
This is the third this is the third soccer game they've released in 12 months.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the improvements are there. The game's really solid. But that's a lot to ask for a consumer to buy a third version of the same game, essentially, in 12 months. So, I mean... I'm looking at this game and I'm thinking, I had a lot of fun playing this game. I absolutely love it. I think, obviously, you know, if you're somebody that's going to want to play online, you're going to need to have the new game. You're going to want the advancements in that sense, and the roster updates and things like that. So I've sort of broken down my recommendation to this game in three ways. If you're somebody who is eagerly anticipating this game, if you're one of those people that chomps at the bit to have every single version of this game, you will love this game. You will not be disappointed.
I have a quick question for you based on an email that we got from a listener.
Yes.
FIFA Ultimate Team. Is that in there? Did you see that immediately?
Yes. I don't think it's... I believe, because you know me and the Ultimate Team things, I don't
you're
think it's started yet. It's something that I think begins in about a month, but it's in there.
Okay.
Yeah.
We need a rating.
Well, I haven't finished my review yet.
Okay, get to it.
I was going to say that the second thing I would say is, if you don't own a FIFA game, pick this up. If you've got 10 and you've got World Cup, I can't recommend you get this game.
It's not enough.
I'm going to say that the game is an 8.5. It's a really good game. But if you have previous incarnations of the game, I just can't say get it.
Okay, 8.5 for FIFA 11. Let's go over to Dead Rising 2, check in with Calhoun. What did you think? A lot of zombies to slay. Did you enjoy it throughout?
I didn't really enjoy this game throughout. It takes a while to get into a Dead Rising game, because Dead Rising games are very unique. You just got to accept that the Dead Rising game is going to be what it is, and you got to play to that level.
It's zombie mashing. How is that unique?
All these first-person shooters we played today, a lot of games today are very... you know, identical to each other, so it's very easy to slip into them and just play them. there's a bit of a learning curve.
This is a third-person beat-em-up.
Yeah, if you haven't played this game, it's a third-person beat-em-up, as you put it. It's an open-world sandbox game where the zombie apocalypse, for lack of a better term, happened, and everyone just basically went, okay, and they made a game show out of it. And you raised your eyebrow, yes, but that's what happened.
No, I didn't raise my eyebrow. That's my natural eyebrow lift.
Regardless, so basically you play as Chuck Green, who's a contestant in this, you know, game show based on zombies, but as with all zombie-related things, the zombies eventually get out, cause havoc, you end up getting blamed for their release, and, you know, the game goes on, you got to prove your innocence, so on and so forth. And you know what? I like this game a little bit more than the original because they made some really good improvements. The survivors from the first game were just ridiculous in the fact that you could have a strong wind and it would take out the survivors, and a lot of Dead Rising is just escorting survivors back to the safe house from, you know, wherever you find them throughout a shopping mall or a casino or wherever they are. So it's good to actually have them survive a little bit, you know, because it actually makes the game a little easier and a little bit more enjoyable. And the story's interesting. They have multiplayer, which, you know, me and multiplayer not in every game. This game actually fits. It's basically you play inside the reality television game show I mentioned, and you just play little mini games, but they're a lot of fun. So I really enjoy that. But there's a lot of problems with this game. If you're a fan of loading screens, you'll love this because there's a loading screen every 5 steps or every 10 seconds. And there's countless times where it's loading screen, cutscene, loading screen, cutscene. So
let's talk about create a weapon. That's a big feature.
Yeah, I was going to get to that. And my point about create a weapon is the fact that it's pointless because it's great to have all these weapons you can put together, but, you know, the safe house is where you go to the most. And besides the safe house, there's a box of nails and there's a bat, so you make a spiked bat. That weapon works as well as any other weapon in the game. So,
but each weapon attacks people in different ways, and it stirs it up and makes it a little bit more interesting.
If you want to just play this game to, you know, slay zombies, then yeah, sure. Okay,
that's what you do in Dead Rising.
You mash up
zombies.
From what I remember from Dead Rising 1, that was pretty much the game.
There's also a storyline which I'm actually quite enjoying. But yeah, I mean, there's two ways to look at it. If you want to just slay zombies, then sure, go right ahead. If you're more interested in the storyline, I would just grab the bat and the nail every time because every weapon pretty much does the same amount of damage. So
it's so much cooler to smash zombies with a newspaper box than it is to just swing a bat for however many hours
like I said,
it takes.
I mean, there's two ways to look at it.
All right, let's wrap it up. We got to go.
So my biggest problem though with this game is the time mechanic. Because it was in the original Dead Rising, it was in Dead Rising K-Zero. You have to be at certain places at certain times to unlock the next story mission or whatever. You know, do different things in this game. And it's great. You know, it's a great idea. Except for the fact that, you know, they've made this beautiful world. There's lots to do in it. You can have a lot of fun just fooling around. And then they don't give you any time to do that. They just rush you on to the next thing. So I really did not like the time mechanic for that part because why make a great world if you won't just let me fool around in it for a few hours?
I don't think you like the time mechanic of this show either. Let's wrap it up. Come on.
8 out of 10 is what I'm going to give this game.
8 out of 10 for Dead Rising 2. You played it on 360?
I played it on the PS3.
PS3. How about that?
It really bugged me because I spent all that time on K-Zero and couldn't use my K-Zero guy and all the points, all the experience I earned from that on the PS3.
I'm sorry to hear that. I got to play the Deathspank sequel, Deathspank Thongs of Virtue, on the 360. And pretty much if you're a fan of the first one, chances are you'll like the second one. It's basically the exact same thing with a new storyline and a lot more gun power. Before, it was a lot of swords and hammers and axes and everything of the sort. Now, you still have some of that stuff as well, but you'll get a lot more long-range ammunition, guns, grenades, as well as bazookas and whatnot. The story takes you from the end of the first one, which is where you find out. I mean, I'm not going to spoil it, but you find out that Deathspank is powered by a thong, and the person you slay has a thong as well. And then in the start of the second one, Thongs of Virtue, you discover that there are other superpowers out there that are powered by these thongs, and they've been corrupted by the amount of power that they are given through these thongs. And so what you're doing is it's your basic dungeon crawler as well. It's got the same amount of humor that you saw in the first one. If you didn't, it's definitely worth checking out. My main problem with Deathspank Thongs of Virtue is that it's pretty much the exact same thing. The original came out just about 2.5 months ago. They haven't bothered changing anything, and that may be good. It's $15, so you're not putting too much out there, and you will be rewarded with a quality, creative game, but it's the exact same thing as far as, you know, there's not really much as far as puzzle solving goes. It's all, you know, doing missions that they deem to be unimportant to the overall theme of the game, as opposed to the main objectives. There are tons of these side quests that you can do. I do them anyways for the sake of doing them, because it's part of the game. It's in there for a reason, so I try to do it. It's a lot of fun, but I don't think there's enough in it that's new that makes it a must get like I felt the first one was. If you don't have either, I would probably recommend getting the first just so you can get an idea from the story. The second one is out there now for $15. I like it a lot. I give it, you know, an 8 out of 10, but it definitely could have been more if they added a little bit more than just some guns. So that's Deathspank, Thongs of Virtue.
We've got game. Do you? Game over.
And this is where we provide our parting shots for myself. I gotta say, I'm excited to bring you the 2K11, NBA 2K11 review next week. I've spent a little bit of time with it. I don't want to say too much other than, Elite 11 backed off, and perhaps with very good reason, not just because of their own doing. Moment, what do you think?
Arkham City. Batman Arkham City has a new interrogation mode. This game has yet to have a release date, but we think it's coming out next year. It's supposed to come out next year. The mode is I don't know if it's taking over detective mode, but
I'd imagine
it's
in conjunction with.
Yeah. So basically what happens is Batman can scan with this interrogation mode, see who he needs to talk to, approach these thugs, and give them a bit of a beating.
To get information.
But the thing is, though, that you can't beat them to an unconscious point or you will not get that information. And I think that's kind of a cool feature. So the hype builds for Arkham City. Ken.
ESPN.com has partnered with EA Sports to provide simulations week by week of the NFL season. So it's kind of a cool thing. Go on ESPN and check it out. They simulate every game every week. So you can find out virtually how your team does before your San Francisco 49er team virtually goes out on the field and gets whooped. Calhoun.
Guys, it's amazing the difference a week can make. Last week, we were talking about a possible NASCAR game that could be coming. We really weren't totally sure. This week, Activision has confirmed NASCAR 2011 is coming. It's going to be hitting the stores sometime February 2011.
Can't wait. For Momin Qureshi, Ken Rodney, and Brian Calhoun, I'm Zach Cooper, turning left all the time on God Game on the Fan 590.